Oh my, everybody up on this roof, that they're all off the roof. I am on the roof of Explosion 4. Got fire through the roof of the fire, knowing the entire rear section.
Now, remember, given the mayday, has he been accounted for? Okay.
610B, that was the mayday. 610B.
I'm here. We got a fire. 1.5-story, single family dwelling. Fire shown from the second floor. Give me a second alarm on this.
Up to the top floor. I got people hanging out the top floor windows with a baby.
Commercial building. A lot of fire, a lot of smoke. Go ahead and strike a third alarm on my orders on this.
I got people on the front fire escape here with windows vented below them. We need somebody up there.
Yeah, let them know we got a job. I'm pulling up now. Second alarm, I got a 1-story single family frame, heavy fire showing from the attic.
So we're using all hands. We got one line stretched, fire on the fourth floor, second line being stretched, primary searches are underway.
Hey, welcome back to one of our fire engineering podcasts, The Command Post. I'm Chief Rick Lasky, along with my best buddy, Chief John Salkin. We've got another great show for you today. Actually, the topic we just came up with, we've talked about, I would say several times before, on this show and one of our other shows, but we'll explain why we're going to talk about it again. But John, before we jump into this, two things I didn't want to pass by. One is, we're closing in on someone's graduation, are we not?
Yes, we are very close to my son Brian. He is just about completing the Wichita, Kansas Fire Academy, him and a small group of about 15 recruits. I'm not sure if they call them recruits or not. That may be a misspeak. But anyway, they are just about to be done. Another 2 days, and I am preparing to go to the graduation. So he's worked very hard. He has, he and I talk pretty regularly about it, and he's described a lot of the routine that they go through and the level of the level of exertion and heat and strength a pretty tough go around. Yeah, my son was a firefighter already somewhere else and been to an academy, and he was a United States Marine. And he said this is some of the hardest stuff he ever did. So he feels accomplished. A couple of people washed out, of course. And he's getting ready to move into a firehouse somewhere and start taking in runs.
Well, and I think it's pretty cool. This is the third graduation you're attending between boot camp with the Marines and
absolutely. Yeah.
And with just Brian alone and then his other fire department and this one. But man, oh man, and we did a show, right? We did a show. Why do we always talk about Stockton, California and Wichita, Kansas and Louisville? When you would tell me what he would tell you about the academy, I start getting excited. I'm like, God, that is just, and John, I'll just say this before we move on. There are people out there that if they heard you describe how tough that academy is, they would be like, you can't really be that way nowadays. I just think it's awesome. It's what the FDNY does. It's what Chicago does. It's what, Dallas does, Fort Worth. It's what LA does. You know what I'm saying? Tough, hard fought. You earn it. And how excited I am for Brian.
And I've said this to Brian, I've said it to other people, about Wichita and about other places. That's as good as you're ever going to be. Day one out of the academy is as good as you're ever going to be, as healthy as you're ever going to be, as fit as you're ever going to be, as fast as you're ever going to be. And to let people slide, to let people, break the barrier a little bit and say, I got pretty close. He almost made it. We're not going to wash him out. He put 6 weeks in, he put 8 weeks in. To put that above the next 10 weeks, 10 months, 10 years, career. And I remember you saying it as a fire chief, unlike a fire chief of a place like New York City or Chicago or Boston, you as a fire chief in Louisville and probably majority of fire chiefs across the country are directly involved in the hiring process. Sometimes in a small way, sometimes an interview or an introduction,
right.
You're still involved. And I remember you saying that's the most important job of the fire chief is to hire the right people, to hire the people with the right skills, because that's it. They're done. They're cemented in. And that's as good as they're ever going to get. And if you hire some weaklings or some people that just don't measure up, they're not going to measure up day one. And it's just going to go downhill from there. And those are the folks that end up with problems and lawsuits and complaints and all sorts of other stuff versus having a high standard and maybe washing some people out, and not to wash them out, washing them out as a as an unfortunate but necessary reality to getting people ready to be structural firefighters.
You know? Well, and we've said how many times, not everybody belongs being a firefighter. It's just not for everybody. You know, there's a lot of professions that, you know, some people don't belong to be a school teacher, some people, whatever. And I'll finish this part with this. And you've heard me say this umpteen times, in the absence of a good hiring process and the absence of a good background process, you hire problems. They don't become problems after you hire them. You hired them as problems. They walked at you. They just snuck it past your week interview or whatever you did. So hats off to Wichita.
All I can tell you is Wichita's not hiring any problems. I can tell you that.
Well, congratulations, Brian Salka, on a great job. And you talk about a guy who is fit as could be. And I know who in the family there, his wife is you know, the professional, fitness trainer and police officer. She's making sure. Hey, before we move on, John, I want to throw congratulations to our good friend, Chief Donna Black from the Duck, North Carolina Fire Department. Everybody goes out there to Dare County out there, you know, on the outer banks, if you will. And they always buy the t-shirts. She just got sworn in as president of the National Association of Fire Chiefs. I love Donna. She's a chief who gets it. You know, their fire department, their people, she gets it. Incredible incident commander, leader, everything. So just, wow, we got great. Someone great leading us. And then, John, I had to throw a thanks out there a little while back. My chief, Ryan Fetzer, with Wichita West here in Texas, wrote a grant through Firehouse Subs. And there's a lot of great places out there, but Firehouse Subs is, you know, owned by firefighters, and their foundation in Louisville, we got awarded a grant for Rescue Jacks. Well, Ryan wrote the grant, and, you know, stuff shows up at firehouses, and a lot of firefighters don't understand the work that goes into that. But Ryan wrote the grant, I think, for $38,000 and brand new battery operated extrication tools. Ooh, hoo, hoo, man. And we just used them again for a pin in the other day. So I got a good chief making some good. We have a great department. They're all great there. FDIC, we're doing 3 degrees of May Day, probably on Friday again. We've been doing that. And it fills up every year. So, folks, if you haven't been out there for the 3 degrees of May Day at FDIC, coming out, it's a great program. We're doing after hours with Bobby Halton and John Norman and Bill Gustin again. And that's a room full of folks. And then, John, how about our new one, Organizing the Fireground, our new workshop? It's new for FDIC. It's something you and I have been teaching for literally decades. But it's always fun to take something like that, fine-tune it, retool it for an FDIC workshop, right?
Yep. Hopefully we get a good crowd in there for the first debut. Yep.
Yeah, it'll be nice. So look for that on the pre-conference workshops on either Monday or Tuesday. It's a four-hour program, Organizing the Fireground, with my buddy John and I. And then again, Wednesday after hours with us, Chief Halton, Chief Norman, and Captain Bill Gustin. And then Friday, our 3 degrees of May Day, and we'll be there all week. We're there signing and visiting, talk with folks all week long. So come and see us. Reminder, as always, we always have some great classes, seminars coming up. Check out our websites, johnsalko.com, chieflassie.com. Anything John and I do together and all my stuff is posted on my website calendar. And if you're looking for a program to host something with us or with our partners at CSU, just give us a shout and we'll make it happen. So, all right, buddy, let's talk about this. Let's talk search and rescue. And I know we were talking the other day, and let me just throw this out there, buddy. I'm still surprised, and I know we want to go through the steps with a primary, secondary, final, and everything from tools and techniques and stuff, but I'm still surprised how many people are out there teaching firefighters. And I'm kind of jumping ahead here, but teaching firefighters, new firefighters, just learning how to search, to hang on to the boot of the firefighter that's crawling in front of them. And before I ask your spin on this, because I know we already talked about it off the air, but we stopped doing that decades ago. The only thing I ever saw with the hundreds and hundreds and hundreds, thousands of firefighters that at U of I, through the fire service that we put through, the only thing you were doing was teaching a firefighter how to hang out to the boot to the firefighter front of you. You weren't teaching him how to search. You weren't teaching him or her about landmarks and windows and walls and communication. You know, you were, and secondly, if you let go of that boot, you know, you're in the middle, you have no idea where you're at. So, I mean, you're just, before we move on, your thoughts on, I was just surprised. It was a pretty big conference here in Texas that they were really hammering, you know, you hang on to a boot, you reach up through the cuff of the pant, like, and you grab that boot and you hang on to it and you anchor in. And, you know, especially when it's, I don't know how you can search doing that with maybe a tool in your hand, or even, I don't know how you could do that.
Let me tell you. Unless there are some extenuating circumstances, or unless there's something here, or, you know, unless there's a condition that whoever that was teaching that and saying that, unless there's a condition that they could explain that would justify that, that is indefensible. It's indefensible. That'd be like saying, take your coat off if it gets too hot while you're searching. You know what I'm saying? It's just indefensible. There's absolutely no reason. And I could go through not a dozen reasons, but I could probably come up with boom, 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 2, 3, 4 reasons right here, right now, at the top of my head, without having thought about it, of why that's ridiculous. The first one is, now you're putting two people searching the same little path, even though technically the guy has got his right hand on the other guy's left boot and maybe he's farther out into the room. That's still nonsense. That's number, you know, people should go in an opposite direction. You got two people going through a room, not in a hardware store, not in an auto body shop, but right, in a home, in a residential building. If two guys or two firefighters going into a room, they should go left and right. One left and one right, meet each other somewhere around the back. There's a whole process to it, but they certainly shouldn't be touching each other, holding on to each other the whole way around. And all the other stuff that you said, if somebody's so inexperienced, so incapable of going through a room by themselves that they need to hold on to the guy's boot next to them, then they shouldn't even be inside the building. They should be outside directing traffic or filling tankers or rolling holes or doing some shit. But there's no reason. There's absolutely no reason, you know, off the top of my head, my opinion, of course, unless somebody's got some particular kind of an emergency condition or something. But that's not the way to train people. And then if you train somebody to do that, then they're going to train somebody. You're going to have a whole company and a whole group full of people doing it. And it's so much better, faster, more efficient ways. And as always, this all comes down to one word, them. There's somebody in that room waiting to be rescued to the left, and two guys go to the right, holding onto each other and slow down. Takes another 3 minutes to get around while grandma's breathing carbon monoxide, or while some kid in a crib is getting, you know, burnt up from the heat at the ceiling. It's just, I'll just call it indefensible and leave it at that. I have other words.
Well, and you know, we used to talk about this forever. It's like, okay, so, you know, I said, well, if you're teaching people to hang out to the boot of the person in front of you, then part two of that drill is, okay, John, recruit or probationary firefighter John Salka, I'm gonna blindfold you. I'm gonna pull your hood over your mask. I'm gonna walk you into the room, spin you around in circles to help you to the floor. Because if you let go of my boot, you don't know where the wall. You don't know which wall. You haven't felt a sofa. You haven't come across a corner. You haven't felt furniture. You haven't felt. You don't know where the windows are. You know nothing. And here's the fact. Vinnie Dunn has talked about our mentor and friend forever. And proven, you know, when they talk about the point of no return, the point of no return into a room is still about 5 feet, you know, and if you're in further than 5 feet and it flashes, your chances of getting out of there without being badly burned or dead are pretty slim. And the reason is the average size firefighter could call about two and a half feet a second in turnout pants. So if you go 1,001, 1,002, that's 5 feet. You add 2 more seconds to that, you're 10 feet. If I let go of your boot and you keep going 5 feet, you make a right 5 feet. And this is what I say when people always go, I can't believe this firefighter got burned up. How did he end up by himself? There you go. So why not train firefighters on how to search with a partner? And let's talk about it. In fact, we should call this, let's call this teaching search and rescue. You know, just that we've done search. John, let's run through, before we get into a little bit of the techniques, the difference between the primary, secondary, and the final searches. I'll jump ahead here. I was going to say at the end here, large area searches, we're not even talking about that. That's for a whole other class, whole other show by itself. Difference between primary, secondary, final search with Chief Salka, you know.
Right. I mean, we're, we're essentially here talking about residential buildings, houses, yeah, apartments, and things of that nature, right? So, you know, living rooms, dining rooms, bedrooms, kitchens, hallways, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And a primary search is the first, it's the primary. It's the first search. It's the first firefighters that are getting into the building or into the occupancy or into the apartment. And it should be quick and rapid. And that's the first really fast, really efficient, as efficient as you can be, but with an emphasis on speed. Why? Because there's people in there that have been in there since before the bells even went off. If you were homeowner, right, you were a volunteer, you were out in the yard cutting the grass. If you were at the firehouse, you might have been training on something or having a meal or whatever. Those folks were in the smoke when you were doing that. And then the alarm went off, then the response came in, then you had to drive all the way there, then you had to gear up, stretch a line, get in. So they've already been waiting a long time for you to get right there. So if you decide to do a primary search, you got to get moving. You got to be moving. There should be some hustle in your step. We've been through that before too. So the primary search is not just rapid. I'll call it a very rapid and efficient search.
Down and dirty. Down and dirty.
Absolutely. And the thing is to get it, to start it quickly, to get there and off the rig and get in there quickly to get the search done, to conduct the search, move through quickly. And if there's somebody in there, to get them out of the building as quickly as you can.
Well, and quickly here, I'm going to say quickly, but, you know, one of the things I think we get hung up on too, John, we're doing a primary. You come across somebody, and I think maybe it's always been photographs or now cell phones. There's nothing wrong with dragging somebody to a hallway or to a door, handing them off to somebody, going back in and finishing what you started out doing. You don't have to come out in front of all the cameras, be carrying somebody or whatever. You're still going to get the credit. You know what I'm saying?
Some guys are thinking, all right, so good. I find a victim. I drag him out of the bedroom into the living room, but you're still in a fire apartment or the fire, you know, the house. And it's still shitty conditions. You get him to the front door now, and there's a fresh firefighter there. There's a guy there just approaching the door. You know, he knows you have a victim. You're called, I have a victim. Come into the front door. And as you're bringing the victim out, the guy says, oh, you can take him the rest of the way out. I'll go in. No, you're not going to go in. You don't know where I started. You don't know where I stopped. What are you going to go in and start the room all over again? Absolutely not. Take the victim. Thank you very much. You go back in because you just came out. You know how far you were. You go right to the point where you found the victim and pick the search up there. So all these people come up with all these idiotic rules sometimes. I don't know where to get them. Oh, let the fresh guy go in with the fresh bottle of air. Wrong answer. Wrong answer. Let the guy go back and resume a search. He's familiar with the room already. He knows what room he was in. Yeah, the guy doesn't even know what room he was in if he brings him to the front door.
Well, and this goes back down to, you and I have said this, you know, Bobby Halton, our good friend and our partner on our Hump Day Hangouts with Terry McGrath and Scott Thompson, you know, he mentions that he always brings up the phrase street cred, you know, experience. Now, not everybody, you know, and I say this all the time, John, you know, making a grab is a pretty big deal, but there are firefighters with 40 years in the fire service who have never drugged somebody out of a burning building unconscious. And
how many years?
40.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. These guys with decades that have never touched an unconscious victim.
And because it's, I always say, because it's not television. Like there's cops, there's police officers, never shot a real bullet at a real bad guy because it's not television. So it doesn't mean you're a bad firefighter. It doesn't mean that at all. It's not what you think of TV. So if you actually put somebody on a polygraph and go, when's the last time you've been on your hands and knees or with a tick or whatever, found someone unconscious in a building, drug them out? You know, there are some guys that are just lucky and they crawl over people all the time and find them, you know, but those are few and far between. So the rest of them have to know and understand what you said about the primary search being down and dirty, handing off victims, get back in. You were saying it. I'm already going, yeah, he or she doesn't know where I stopped. And now they got to find the room. They actually may miss something because they may crawl past something that they thought we searched that we didn't, you know.
Found another room and reported complete. Now your room isn't done. And it's
that was a great point you made about the primary, you know, getting in there. So talk about the secondary.
So the secondary is obviously the incident commander. You get a primary search for all your areas and in the areas above, however big the building might be. And then you got to get people in there to do a secondary search, which is, you know, there's a lot of common phraseology. A lot of people have used and worked on and adapted and maybe even improved on the FDNY terminology. Painstakingly complete, right, is the words that they use in the FDNY. And lots of people have adopted those words. And that's what it is. A really painstakingly complete search of an area that has what? Already been searched one time in the primary search. but it's been searched in a primary search under much more severe conditions.
Right.
Now the conditions should be alleviated to some degree. It still might be hot. It still might be smoky, but it should be nothing like it was during the primary.
And John, let me ask you something. This has come up several times before. I've heard people describe a secondary search. Now it's more methodical as this, which is right, you know, but, you know, it's like they describe it like there's absolutely no smoke, nothing burning. I can't tell you people I've heard that a secondary search, the environment's controlled. We've got this, we've got that. You know, there's been times my guys have said primary's clear. And I've gone, all right, you know, 164, go in and give me a secondary right away. If we miss somebody, I'm not going to wait till we, you know, all right, is it, you know what I'm saying?
That's the purpose of a secondary search is not to make it easy on the searchers.
Right.
If you have a really good rapid, if you have a good primary search done and they get done really fast, guess what? The conditions are still crappy. If you have a slow primary search, if it takes them a long time to get the primary done because they're not experienced and they don't have a lot of training, and then by the time they come out, guess what? Conditions are probably going to be much better. But if you got a good experienced truck, guys that know what they're doing, you know, a rescue or whoever it is that does your searches, they get in there quick and get it done quick. Guess what? It's still going to be pretty crappy in there when a secondary search begins.
I think they confuse secondaries for final searches. So they talk about, you know, conditions, you know, I hear it like they describe it, John, like there's no smoke and there's no like remnants of fire in there. And I'm like, no, I think you're talking about the final search.
Right.
You know,
if that even happens.
Yeah. So we talk about primary being down and dirty, fast, quick, cover as much territory as you can. Remembering that adults are like dogs, they flee, kids are like cats, they hide. So if it's a kid's room, you got to slow down just a little bit and reach around where you would reach for a full grown adult, because kids are kids, you know. And before I move on from that, God bless, Tommy Sherbino taught me this a long time ago, John. We had three kids in, and I remember when we found the one, he started yell, Ricky, no, Ricky, get back in. The kids crowd together, man. They crowd together. You're going to find them. They huddle up. You know, wherever you found the one, you find. And I'm telling you, right as rain, where they found the one, boom, boom, there were the other two right there. So, and then our secondary search, again, could be, and I've heard people, again, I keep going back to this, describe in their classes, it's almost like, well, not yet for the set. Wait, we have to, no. I've had a primary search done, getting a secondary. The whole point is if we miss someone, let's get them out now. We're not going to leave them in the smoke and in the heat, you know, and go, well, now it's more favorable. No, get your ass in there and get the secondary search done. Good.
You made a great point. You said an important word in case you miss somebody.
Yeah.
You know, and nobody wants to miss anybody, but sometimes people get missed on a primary search. A primary search under really adverse conditions, high heat condition, advancing fire, you know, thick, zero visibility smoke, a really challenging primary search, sometimes a victim can be missed in one way or another. And it's not okay, but it happens. That's what, number one, why there is a secondary search.
That's right.
Number two, that's why the most important rule about the secondary search is nothing shall be missed. No secondary search shall miss a victim. There's no excuse for missing a victim on a secondary search. A secondary search has to be painstakingly complete and nobody should be missed, meaning double, triple, check the mattress, flip it over again, walk around the other side, Billy, sweep against the wall. You got to take that extra time on a secondary search. Nobody should be missed on a secondary search. It's actually a little more challenging in some ways, a secondary search. I remember when I was Lieutenant in Squad 1 in Brooklyn, often we get to a fire. Because of the distance traveled and a number of companies that were there, a lot of the work may have been done already. Still a fire, still crappy conditions. Oh, good, squad, do me a favor. Get to the floor above. Give me a good secondary to the floor above. And sometimes my guys, not often, but sometimes you sense a little bit of laissez-faire attitude. Like, you know, we got this. And I'd be like, hey, guys, secondary search. Let's pay attention. Pay attention to what you're doing here. Sometimes guys just sort of mosey through and kick over the same chair and the same mattress and open up the same closet instead of looking a little bit more, you know, critically at every little area of the building, maybe even going through some of the debris on the floor, moving some clothes, all of a sudden, holy crap, I got a kid here, you know, that maybe they missed on the primary.
Well, and one of the things I don't want us to glance over with the primary and the secondary is while we're searching for people, we're also searching for fire or monitoring conditions and or especially I tell guys in a second, a secondary, just don't be walking around, like you said, knocking stuff around. This is a good time to go, okay, we've been in here for however long, the fire has attacked certain parts of this room or this building already. You know, you're not just bumbling around and going, well, the only thing we're doing, you know, the only thing we're looking for is people and animals. No, I want my guys in there going, wait, guys, look at this, the floor sagging. You know, you know, call Chief Salk on the radio and say, Chief, I know they had a lot of fire underneath us, but where that bedroom, where this floor sagging? I mean, just there's all kinds of things you can notice when you're doing the secondary search. And then the last thing I just want to mention, and I know we've talked about this before, you know, is the final or tertiary search, whatever you want to call it. But the final search, that I always said, this is the kick the newspaper articles out, keep us out of the news. This is the, okay, we did our prior secondary, guys, now we need to get some shovels. They said someone's still missing. You know what I'm saying? How many times have you heard the insurance people, family members, or the cleanup company goes in there and they under the debris, they find a person. And like you said, it's unacceptable. And if you did a good 1, 2, 3 and you knocked them out, then you should be good.
And I'll tell you, I've seen chiefs, you know, an incident commanders order a final or a tertiary or a third search for that reason. Somebody saying, you know what? He rarely leaves that room. You know, he is mobile, but he rarely leaves that room. Or sometimes the firefighter saying, you know what, Cap, you know what, Chief, I want to go through it again. I just don't feel like I'm just feeling like there might be somebody in there. You know,
how many times have you and I talked about gut feeling, right? If your gut, you just said it. If your gut's like, Chief, I want to go through it. I want to go through it again. Or, you know, something's telling you, something in your noggin is telling you, you don't feel right. And you know what, mm-hmm. right? We've always said this about structure conditions, fire conditions, whatever. Bad guy walking up on the street. Don't throw that intuition. Is that the right word? You know, that gut feeling the side. So,
and there's another thing we didn't mention yet that's important.
Go ahead.
And it's an old piece of information. It's been around forever, but it's true. Try and use different people. You know, if you get the A team, the primary team, you know, Bill and George, or the guys from Ladder 1, if they do the primary in the fire department, or the fire room, or the floor above, or whatever area, you know, and now you want a secondary search, by all means, try not to send the same two people, even if it's the same company. Get two guys that check the other bedrooms on the other side of the hallway, just swap sides of the hallway. Or just make up another team from, you know, other firefighters that are there. And of course, the purpose of that is people tend to just go to the same areas, the same ideas come to their mind as they're searching. The conditions might be a little better. You might have a little better visibility. Maybe you'll do it a little bit differently. But putting a new person, the person that hasn't been in that room yet at that fire, is going to guarantee a whole fresh perspective on that fire. They're going to look different things, around different things, and at things a little bit differently. So great habit to get into.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because we've talked about that umpteen times, that having a second separate set of eyes, senses get in there is huge. So let's run through some points here as we're working our way through this. Personnel needed for the search, John. You know, we've talked about...
That's always a point of discussion and a point of not argument, but, you know, you don't need a lot of people to search. If you're searching a private dwelling, even if you're searching an apartment, you need two people. You need two people to get a search team together. Two people could search. I'm not saying a whole house. Certainly, there's mega mansions out there. There's big apartments in big cities and stuff.
Right.
But the fire room is usually one or two rooms. Usually, a two-person team going into a private dwelling somewhere can search the whole fire floor and maybe even advance to the floor above after that's done or after the line's in place. So, you know, if you've got a small career department, you've got 9 people, 10 people, 12 people responding, you should be able to get a pair. You should be able to get two people early in the fire. You know, one of my favorite points is I can't tell you how many places, but I would bet my bottom dollar that it's the majority of fire departments will have a second line stretched into a house fire, not to a new area of fire, to either back up or be ready to back up or to go to the floor above to search for fire. A lot of places will stretch a second line before they'll deploy a search team. And I think it's a mistake. And it's equally incorrect, in my view, to send a hose line to the floor above and call them a hose line search team, because I don't think you can really do both well. You know, obviously you can get some searching done off a hose line, but my personal perspective is that's going to be a half-assed search. It's really not
half-assed, and you're going to run out of air before you're done. I mean, right. You know, it's
the hose liner out is not the way to search.
on the second floor, no less. The second floor, you know, the concept is there, you know, but, you know, people can, you know, it's a good debate, but you're wasting time. You know, I know some of the departments, we don't go to the second floor above without a line. Okay. Maybe, you know what, you have two guys on the line and you have four guys, two going in different directions, left and right or whatever. But I agree with you, John.
Some way you're going to have to modify that.
Yeah.
You know, if there's places that say we don't search without a line, that's not only unfortunate, it's incorrect. There's no other way of labeling that. It's incorrect. If your fire department isn't qualified or trained, I can't knock your experience because you get what you get. But right. If you lack experience, then you should be doubling up on training. There's no excuse for any fire department that searches occupied buildings where people live. There's no excuse for them not being able to train some of their people to go in there without a hose line and make a search.
Well, and this goes back to what we say all the time about how important training is. Training is paramount. It's an absolute priority for the company officer to make sure that they're training their people, that his and her people are doing their jobs. And the battalion should make sure the company officer is doing that. Because we've said it before, you don't have to go to fires every day to be great at search and rescue. You want to be great at a particular task, then you practice it, and 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 you make that your art. And everything comes together when you're actually thrown into that actual situation. John, so we talked, you know, the two guys and gal, you know, two guys or gals going in for the search. We've done before, we've talked about the third person, you know, maybe the officer pushing out a hallway and I'm going left and you're going right into different bedrooms. Tell me this, you're back on rescue three, all right, with Pete Lund, all right, now John Norman and Jay Jonas and that incredible cast of characters. You're given search. You're gonna search. In your mind, there's got to be a decision as to whether you're gonna, you know, this whole go, no go. You're looking at this building, you're looking at the amount of fire, you're looking at rooms, whatever. And I know it's hard to ask this because it's like, show me the fire and I can answer the question. But what factors do you consider, like, go back to Rescue 3, as to whether you actually search or don't search that particular building, or maybe you change the avenue, you do that inner search or whatever. What, you know, I'm going with this. You're like, there's got to be a point where you go, you know, is this a go or no go situation, or we're going to find a different way or something? I'm just throwing it out.
That's a great question. There's probably not one answer to that. Everybody's probably got some.
It's probably a whole other show for us.
Different. That would be great. Because I know there's articles on go and no go. There's people that have programs go, no go. And my go, no go is, it's got to be uncomfortable. There has to be some condition developing that makes you say, hey, wow, it's getting hot in here, or something of that nature. Most of the time, it's not visual. If you're visual, you can see fire. Fire out every window, fire out the doorway. Obviously, we're going to have to knock that down and then go in. But if you're talking going down a hallway and it's getting hotter and hotter and hotter, or it's getting hotter, but it stops getting hot. Now it's just continuously the same temperature that you felt 10 feet back, and you go 10 more feet and it's still that same temperature. Guess what? You're good to go. Maybe it's venting out the windows. Maybe, you know, the fire has burnt up a couple of rooms. Maybe there's heat and smoke out in the hallway because the doors are open. And now you're going to have to penetrate as far in as you can go. When you get somewhere and say, holy shit, it's getting hot. Get on the floor. Then maybe that's the point where you say, okay, reach in a little bit, see if you can see something, close the door. Maybe you have to back out, or maybe you have to search the other side of the hallway. My rule always was, there's got to be some kind of a physical, something physically happening that you're feeling, some kind of sensation that's telling you, you know what, it's getting a little bit too hot here, or I'm seeing fire up on the ceiling now. Guess what? We should maybe back out.
Right.
It shouldn't be some thought. It shouldn't be some visual thing that you're looking at saying, looks pretty dense, the smoke in there. Maybe we shouldn't be in there. You know what? The building's on fire. You shouldn't be in there. Unfortunately, you joined the fire department and these people called you to come and help them. Now you got to go in there, you know?
Exactly. I mean, that, you know, and there's a time, and this goes back to what you said to Andy Fredericks. I see that picture of you all the time pointing up at the board. And I think I can almost say it word for word. If my family's trapped in there, my wife and kids, I want the craziest son of a bitch you got going after them. That doesn't mean the person that throws caution to the wind doesn't, you know, it has nothing to do with that. You want, what you're saying is, you want the most the most aggressive, highly trained, into the job, kick ass, here I come, get out of my way, firefighter. Not some crazy idiot that does stupid stuff. Right. I know exactly what you mean when you say that. It's like, give me that, you know what I'm saying? We talked Wichita. That's Sam Hiddle, right? That's the guy you want going after your kids.
I just read something about him today somewhere. I forget where I was, if I was online or on Facebook. Somebody was talking about him, about the level of training and his level of, you know, expertise and being into it. And listen, everybody is different. Everybody is not the most aggressive, the most, you know, well-trained firefighter. Everybody's a little bit different. Everybody even has a different level of, or a different point of no return, where they're going to say, okay, back out, guys. I know officers that are a little bit more cautious than some other officers. I know officers that are a little bit more aggressive and firefighters that are a little bit more aggressive than some of the other really good firefighters that I worked with. So everybody's individual, and it's really strictly based on some combination of training and experience. Those are the two things that drive you at a fire, training and experience.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, you know what? We can't pass through this without talking about, just briefly, folks, you got to know your SCBAs. You have to know how much air you have and how you use it, how quickly you use it. You know, I think one of the things, you say this all the time, if you're coming off, you're not training your firefighters how to stay oriented and reduce or zero visibility in a room full of smoke, you're not doing your job. You know, part of this is, if you don't know your SCBA forwards, backwards, upside down, don't go in a burning building. If you do not know your SCBA backward, and you know what? How hard is that? You know what? Like you said before, it's training. It's asking questions. And there's videos. There's pictures. There's books. Go put it on over and over and over. Breathe, breathe, breathe. You know, work with it. Crawl. Do whatever you have to do. If you're not that comfortable with your SCBA, please don't crawl into a burning building. So know your SCBA and know your airtime. Talk briefly about tools.
I want to comment on the SCBA.
Okay.
And most SCBA training, you can get a guy or a gal, a firefighter, really well trained in zero smoke. They make all sorts of devices now that will smoke out your face piece a little bit, a lot, a little bit more, a little bit more. Or you can just go to the old fashioned, turn the hood around or put a piece of wax paper over it. And you can start challenging people, taking the SCBA off, doing reduced profile, quick release, changing bottles, putting the face piece back on if it gets ripped off. And all of this can done without even a smoke machine, without any smoke, with the instructor standing next to the guy that he's training, you know, with a cigarette in his mouth, talking to him, telling him, okay, do this, turn left, turn right. All right, what do you do now? Where's your buckle? There it is. Good. So SCBA training can be one-on-one training, one-on-five training, can be done on the apparatus floor, in the meeting room of a firehouse, in the bunk room. And, you know, it can be done 1,000 places. You can get people to stage one, stage two, stage three, before you ever expose them to, let's say, a burn building or a training area with a smoke machine where they're actually going to actually see some real smoke. You can train people with zero smoke, a couple of levels up from start, and they can get really good, which is a good instructor and good material.
SCBA time, right? SCBA time. Train. Talk about tools. I know when I used to search, my favorite tool has always been like the Halligan. I like that. You know, there's a lot of guys like to search with an axe, with, you know, spin it around and hold the head by you. Kind of use it as like, you know, a little walking cane to stick in front of you as you're crawling. I like bringing a force entry slash exit tool with me. I see a lot of guys, John, I love the fact they want to bring the irons with them, but they have them married together, even with the straps. And I think you spend more time trying to keep those together as you're crawling. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, I'm a big one on, if it's you and I, here, you take the axe, I got the Halligan. If you want to put something in somebody's hand.
And why would you take an axe other than, and if I could get this phrase out of the fire service, I would delete it from every book and everybody's vocabulary. It's easier. It's easier. Why do you want to bring an uncharged inch of 3/4 line to the top of a stairway in a private dwelling? Wouldn't you want to charge it at the front door? Oh, it's easier to pull it up to the top of the stairs. Anybody who says it's easier, I'd like to just smack them. You know, there's a lot of shit that's easier that doesn't make any sense. So you carry your axe, right? You leave the Halligan, you take the axe, you hold the head, and you use the, you know, the light end of the handle out there, which is a little bit easier, right? What do you do when you get to a door that's locked? How do you force a door with an axe compared to a Halligan? You can force a door by yourself with a Halligan. All you can do is beat the crap out of it with an axe, you know? So again, tools is a real important point, and I'm glad you brought it up, because now I just remembered where I was, what I just read about Sam Hiddle. There was a guy talking somewhere about tools and about search, and he said, you know what, we go in somewhere, maybe I got the New York hook, the Halligan hook, and a Halligan. He said, I'll take the Halligan with me. He said, I'll bang the hook into the wall. I don't leave it on the floor laying around. People trip over it, move it, pick it up, disappear with it.
It gets covered.
We bang it into the wall and leave it hanging on the wall somewhere. And now when I come back, guess what? Nobody else even noticed the hook was there except me, because I put it there. It's like it's hanging literally on a hook on the wall. A pretty cool idea that I never heard before. I have to look into it a little bit more, but I thought it was pretty cool that somebody mentioned that.
You know, and again, you and I talk about how we learn stuff, you know, almost 90 years of experience. You know, if not, between the two of us.
Yeah.
And there's another thing, because I've told guys, don't lay it on the floor. You're going to crawl over it, lose it. They're going to pull
ceiling over it. Especially a 6-foot hook.
Yeah. You're going to pull, you know, all that stuff, boom, done, you know. So again, if you're going to bring a hook, I was never a big hand of trying to drag one all the way through there, but you know, I like the 6-foot, like we talked about.
They could bring your favorite hook, huh? The closet hook?
Oh, God, please.
For all them closet flyers that they have?
Yeah. the Fisher Price pike pole, the little hook. We've talked before, we won't go into it now, but about the importance of knowing how to leapfrog, you know, taking turns, going in a room. You go in this room, I stay at the door, I monitor conditions. We don't lose our way out. You go in, boom, the bedroom, you come out. We've said plenty of times before, don't send two people in a bedroom. Keep one at the door, unless it's there's three of you and it's a big room. But keep someone at the door, you know, that your assurance, your calm, the calming factor when you hear them talk to you. You know, John, how you doing, John? You hear them giving room orientation. You come out, you know, you're good.
And you know where that concept is also helpful. It may have even come from VES. You know, you're outside with a team of two people. You throw the ladder up. One guy butts a ladder. The other guy jumps up there, vents, waits a moment or two, boop, jumps into the room to do a quick search, comes back out, climbs down, and both of them roll the ladder, boop, 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 3-4 times to the next window. Now the guy was just in there, disconnects his air or takes his face piece off or his right. He butts a ladder. Number two guy goes up. Now he does a quick search. Same thing inside, same thing outside. VES. Yep.
Well, and I've always looked at that. I realized early on, it's almost like you increase about a 30 your search time instead of one guy doing all the work and some of you sitting at the door or the window. It's lopsided air consumption. You know what I'm saying? You know, you go in, you come out, Rick. All right, it's clear. Good. We go to the next one. Now you stay there, you slow your breathing and all that. And I go in and do it. So they come out to the hallway where you're the doorway. They're back at the doorway, the window. What terminology do you like there? Because a lot of guys, you know, I guess two different ways. You're calling the search team for a progress report, or they're going to call you to tell you what the results are. I've heard people say clear, negative, complete, or whatever. Does it really matter, or do you like one over the other?
You know, we've always used negative. Primary searches, actually, we've always used complete and negative. You know, that gives you two aspects of the search. Complete means you finished it, and negative means you haven't found anything. So, you know, battalion 1-8 to ladder 1-9, battalion 1-8 to ladder 5-8. Go ahead. How you doing on that primary search on the fire floor? Primary search fire floor is complete and negative. You know, we're moving into doing something else, or they're coming out, or they're moving to the second floor maybe. So I like complete and negative, but I've heard people use the term. Now let's remember, if a firefighter searches a room and comes out to talk to his officer or his partner, whoever it is that's maybe waiting at the door or outside in the hallway, he might say, we're good, we're good. But I don't see why you'd use different terminology. If the room's good, I'd say negative. Let's move on. Negative right. Can't be misunderstood. If you start using different terms, somebody might say, gee, I didn't hear that in my advanced firefighting search class. I don't know what that word means, you know? So I think it's a good idea to be consistent and use the same terminology. We've always used negative. Negative means negative. It means there's nothing in there. We didn't find it.
And you hear it so many times. Also, even progress reports from command and dispatch. All searches are negative, whatever, that kind of all primary searches are negative. So that moves us to the next thing, communication. We've talked before about the importance of communicating with your partner. And this we said, instead of hanging out to the boot, train firefighters how to talk to each other, how to listen for certain noises that tell them what somebody's doing, tools, thumping, you know, crawling, whatever. But how to communicate, how to skip breathe, how to how to take a breath and listen, how to take a breath, how to enunciate through your face piece, even with the voice amp, to take the time to talk to your partner. And the same thing with command. So communications is huge. How often you're outside, you're in the 18th battalion. How often are you looking for a when do you expect to hear progress reports of your search team, John?
I got to tell you, most of the time when I was at work in the 18th battalion, which was a long time, most of the time somebody called me to give me a search result before I thought about calling them, which was good. It means they got their searches done pretty quick. Once in a while, I would hear a search result from one area of the building, but I wouldn't hear it from the other. And that would prompt me. I'd hear, you know, ladder 5-8, the battalion 1-8, 5 floors complete, negative, 10 floors. And I'm thinking, gee, I wonder why 27 is not done on the floor above. I might give him a yell. 1-8 to 2-7, God, how we doing up there, Cap? I'm almost done, Chief. Give me another minute. So sometimes you got to prompt them. I know when I was a truck officer or a squad officer, I was just waiting for my guys to tell me, Cap, it's good, negative, nothing up here. I was dying to get on the radio and say, you know, 1-8 to battalion 4. Secondary search or primary search on a floor above.
Isn't it almost, you just made me think of this. The engine officer can't wait to tell you water on the fire. Right. And this, and you just said the same thing. The search officer can't wait to give a,
good officers, that's all they should be thinking about. When I was a captain of 48 engine, I was just waiting for my eyes to say, you know, 4-8 to 1-8, go ahead. Main body of fire is knocked down. 10-4. I was just dying to say that, and I wouldn't say it until I was satisfied that condition existed.
Well, we've talked before about room orientation drills, how important. We already said that. If you're not trained your firefighters how to stay oriented in a smoke-filled building room, you're not doing your job as a boss of any kind. You know, we'll talk about another day about, I tell people all the time, you teach one of the best room orientation drills anywhere. We talked before about not necessarily bringing a search rope in, you know, residential in bedrooms. All you can do is get your rope all kind of bamboozled. There's a, you know, we're talking different. You want a RIT team, you don't have a hose line or whatever the whole thing is. But some guys, I think they, in their desire to do a great job, John, I think they bring too much stuff sometimes. And they,
you know, and I don't know if it's a desire to do a great job, or the fact that they're not qualified to be in there, or they're afraid of being in there without being connected to the front door. And none of that's acceptable for professional firefighters. If you're a professional firefighter, you're trained, you're protecting your community, people have a high level of expectation, you should be able to go in and search without a rope, without a hose. The reason search ropes are not used in residential buildings or private dwellings or apartment houses is because they're not necessary. The reason you use a search rope in a school or a store is because by moving through that school or that store or that classroom or that auditorium or that theater, nothing you find, nothing you touch or feel is going to tell you where you are. It's just a place full of stuff. If you're in a house and you feel a toilet bowl in a bathtub, you know you're in the bathroom. If you feel a dining room table and 5 chairs around it and a countertop and cabinets, you know you're in the kitchen. If you feel a bed and a nightstand, you know you're in a bedroom. Residential buildings tell you where you are by the furnishings and the sizes right. of the rooms. That's why we use a search rope in buildings that aren't residential. That's why you should not be using search ropes in residential buildings. Your training should surpass that.
Right. And goes back to, this is why we don't hang on to boots. I'm sorry. It's one of my hanging on to boots gets me going about as taking lapel mics off radios, you know, as much as changing channels during the Mayday. I just don't get that stuff. So nope. Lastly, John, as we close this out, we're talking about teaching search and rescue, maybe the keys to a successful kind of, you know, search for you. We talk about how important training is. How important is it, John, when it comes to search drills, to start with, I've always said, start with the simple. It's like the rituals. Always start with the simple and work your way to the complex, right? And then you can kind of mix them up. But some guys right away, like Joe Dillon, one of the lieutenants, we've talked about Joe before, he's from Rockland County, he's in the Air Force. My volunteer department did a great search drill not too long ago here. And there was nothing complicated. There was nothing. It wasn't like we set up booby traps and wires and, you know, trapeze and all that stuff. It was, this is how you go in. This is how you search. This is how you work with a partner. The importance, I think, of going from the simple to the complex is huge. I've said before, John, we used to do all the house burns. We were doing 20, 25 house burns a year. We would take a dry chem fire extinguisher. I think you've heard me talk about this before. And in the room they were going to search, or the rooms, just pop it, poof, pop, and let the cloud of dry cab, not like, you know, everywhere, but just give it a good poof and let it settle. And you know where I'm going with this? It's like when you're looking for a snake in your house. If you people use flour, they put white, you know, you put powder, you can see where the snake went. If it's up in the dryer, whatever. Well, same thing. Guys get done, you know, searching. You bring that guy or gal, that team together. You go, okay, look at this. Look where you did that search. You missed this whole section. There's no hand swipes. There's no nothing. I always thought that was a pretty slick way. You're in a house. Who cares? You're burn building. You can just wash it out afterwards. It's not a big deal.
Absolutely. But one of the things we used to do with the Orange County Training Center and many other places that I've taught at was you bring them into an empty room, you know, and you open up the door. We had a half door. So, they, you know, they're on their hands and knees. They go in, they feel the door. We're standing at the door looking through the open top of it, right? And we're watching them go through it. They just blacked out face piece. They go into an empty room, and we do right-hand search. Go to the right, right? And we would put five objects in there. The first thing they would encounter would be a roll of toilet paper, something very soft and malleable that they could move and smush if they didn't be careful with it. Okay, you got that? Move on. Put it down and move on. And we told them, you have to find stuff, identify it in your mind, and put it back down, and then you're going to come out and draw it. So they would find the toilet paper, then they'd get to the corner, make a left, they go down a little bit, boop, they find a football, feel a football, put it back down. Then they go to the next corner. Then they'd find a garbage can cover. Then they go to the next corner. Then they'd find, you know, a shovel. Then they'd come out and have to take their face piece off, nothing else. Face piece right off, sit down, piece of paper, draw the box, draw the shape and size of the room, and draw garbage can cover, football, toilet paper. And that's a basic level.
And I love, we used to do that. We did that exact drill. I love that drill coming out. And then guys would go, no, John, no. The football was before the baby doll. No. The hydrant wrench. And it's training you, right?
Yeah, exactly. You get a mental picture. That's right.
Yeah. And we've said before, people would just, you didn't, very few times in our career did we crawl into a windowless cube. We crawl into buildings that have doors and windows and hallways and all kinds of stuff and furniture. The whole time you're in there, instead of being consumed with nervousness, you should be thinking about where, like you said, where am I? Oh, you know,
not master's degree material. This is basic knowledge, yeah. Basic intelligence should get you be able to do this.
Exactly. Well, hey, you know what? I mean, we've done hours on search in workshops, search and rescue when we've done that. We always try.
Well, I want
to
correct, not correct you, but I want to correct that term. We didn't talk about search and rescue here. We just talked about search.
Well, yeah.
You know, and I say that all the time. Search and rescue. I don't know who put them together years ago, because most searches don't result in rescues, and searches is one aspect of it. And then if you ask people, raise your hand if you've actually done a rescue, the number of hands goes down dramatically, and it's a whole separate set of skills, none of which we mentioned yet here today. What we talked about was search.
The only thing we came close is handing off the victim.
Right.
So that's a good point. You know, it's just a habit. You always say search and rescue. It's like you say salvage and overhaul together.
Right.
Though we're doing two different things there, right. but that's a good point. Good point. Hey, if they want to get a hold of you, best email.
ChiefJohnSalka@gmail.com.
I'm ChiefLasky@gmail.com. Congratulations to probationary firefighter Brian Salka with the Wichita, Kansas Fire Department. Outstanding.
Yep. He's excited and ready to go.
Oh, excited.
And a good man. They get their money's worth out of him, I'll tell you that.
You can check out John's website at johnsalka.com, chieflasky.com. And as we close things out here, first of all, we hope we get to see you next April. Come out to Organizing the Fireground, man. It's going to be a great, 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 great class. Organizing the Fireground. We'll talk more about another class. But in closing, we always ask you to please keep the men and women serving armed forces in your thoughts and prayers, as well as our brothers and sisters in our law enforcement family. Remember this, especially with us approaching September again. You know, we're moving into that month. Never forgetting means just that, never forgetting. Thank you, be safe, and God bless you. We'll catch you next time.
Bye.